or to the information that's reduced from the ambassador meeting two times. So anyways, this is the face of special education. It includes me as the executive director, and we have two assistant directors. Tina Clark is the assistant director for elementary, so all of our elementary campuses, and then she also oversees assessment and evaluations. And then Jennifer Atkinson is the assistant director for secondary, and she oversees instruction and professional development. So that's kind of how it's divided in leadership level. And then we have four coordinators, one for each theater. Lisa McDaniel is over the theater for Central. Kiara Edgar is the coordinator for the Timber Creek High School theater pattern. Jennifer Hines is the coordinator for the Keller theater pattern. And then Jennifer Anderson is the coordinator for, you can change size, to the Fossil Ridge theater pattern. So that's who makes up the administrative team. Our enrollment this year and over the last several years, as you can see in this slide, has steadily increased. So from the 2015 school year to the 2021 school year last year, the enrollment for special ed has increased from 8.6% to 11.5% or 11.3%. We have almost 4,000 students total in our department that we serve. These are students with disabilities. So they're on an individual education plan. And so over the last 2 years, there's been an increase of about 700 students. The reason for that is several, but one is it's no secret that the state of Texas as a whole, not Keller, but the state of Texas is on a corrective action plan from the United States Department of Education, which is the federal government, on a cap that was imposed. And so the Texas Education Agency had a strategic support plan in place to ensure that all students that were suspected of having a disability were found. So that's called Child Find. That initiative is called Child Find. So you can see that is part of why there's probably been a slow and steady increase dramatically since 2016. We also have improved our evaluation process. Used to, it was common that if a disability wasn't suspected, that we could deny or decline an evaluation. That is still allowable, but we do not engage in that practice at all. So if anyone raises their hands, has a suspicion that a student has a disability, we honor that request. It's much safer and it's better for the student to identify whether or not there's a disability condition to refer or rule out, rather than say we don't suspect it, we disagree that there could be a disability and so we're going to refuse to evaluate. So that is no longer the practice, probably in the entire state of Texas. Also, we have more students that are identified with dyslexia under special ed. There's now a process to offer an evaluation under special ed for dyslexia. So that could be a contributing factor. And then, like I mentioned, that strategic support plan for Child Find. Now, for this school year, we are anticipating an even more increase in enrollment to 12.3%. So this is the preliminary enrollment for the 21-22 school year. So last year was 11.3, we're anticipating 12.3 for this school year. So that's another percent increase. Probably would have been even higher had we not had COVID, because COVID interrupted our evaluation cycle. We couldn't evaluate students virtually when they were at home. That's something that we're looking into now, is providing more training so that in the event there ever is another pandemic or situation where we're not able to work in person, how can we continue the evaluation process remotely when students are at home and we're working from home as well?
I hope there's not another.
Or it could be anything, like, for example, you know, hurricane, for example, because the federal government to districts for missing those evaluations. Even the pandemic, that it was nationwide, you're still responsible for child crime. So this is a visual representation of the Keller ISD Special Education Continuum of Services. We offer varied levels of supports based on students' disability and the implications of those disabilities, from very restrictive on my right side, on y'all's right side, in the green, to least restrictive on the far left side, that mint green. So our restrictive programs are self-contained. These are for students with medically fragile. It could be students with severe behavior problems related to safety and their welfare, that they can't function in a general ed setting. So we have very restrictive programs. Then we have what's new this year. A new initiative is called Blended Co-Teach. It's right now only offered at kindergarten and first grade at select campuses. And these are students that would typically be in an alternative curriculum. So not general ed curriculum, not modified, but an alternative curriculum because of a significant cognitive disability. What we're piloting this year is, instead of making the assumption at a very young age, kindergarten and first grade, that students require an alternate curriculum, or giving the opportunity to have access and exposure to the general ed curriculum in the general ed setting with a general ed teacher and a special ed teacher together. And our goal, our hope, is that we can expand that to second grade next year and then maybe third grade. It really just depends on how things flow. Like I said, we're piloting this year to see how it's going, and it's working okay for some kids, and for others it's not. What we found is some students need more restrictive placement. We're using data to make those decisions for those students.
So is every feeder pattern, like my daughter, she has the co-teacher situation in fifth and sixth grade. So is that across all the feeders, but you're just talking about first and second grade?
Right, this is blended co-teach. So these are students with significant cognitive disabilities in kindergarten and first grade. It's not all students, it's select students that we felt met enough criteria that maybe we could pilot to see how they function in general ed setting with a special ed teacher providing support. It's only at select campuses, and I don't know the names of the campuses right off the hand. I know we have one at Woodland Springs. What is it? Lone Star has one. That's right. I can't remember where we have one right now. Off the top of my head, I have to look that up for Michigan. Right, yeah. We also have consultations, so these could be related service providers that don't work directly with the student, but consult with the teacher on strategies that they could try to implement in the classroom so it's less restrictive. We have resource, so that's modified curriculum. Students that are functioning 2 to 3 years below the grade level, they're still taking the regular STAR test. There's not an in-between STAR test for them. We have co-teach, like we've already talked about, and then in-class support. So that's the kind of the overview of the continuum. And this is just another kind of visual representation of it. So it's like this umbrella of special ed, and then have more students in less restrictive programs, and then bring the in-class support. Co-teach would be next. Resource. We kind of have a tie between self-contained programs and consultation. Those are two different extremes. And then that blended co-teach is small because it just started it this year for the first time. So we created this model as a graphic to help you visually see what is available in Keller ISD. The gray circle on the far left, and you can see that students that are in general ed first. All of our students, we identify as a general ed student first. So they're entitled to the same opportunities, the same supports, the same services, the same extracurricular activities as a general ed student But then they have an IEP, which makes them entitled to other services as well. Something that a lot of times people confuse with that, though, is while they're entitled to GT, for example, it's only common for a student to be twice exceptional, you don't get both a 504 and an IEP. Because an IEP can provide the same thing that a 504 can provide, which is accommodations on top of modifications and specially designed instruction. So you would not have a student with a disability identified with both a 504 plan and an IEP. And then just some of our self-contained programs that I like to highlight are, we have a STARS program, and that's for students that are on a grade level that need some structure, some consistency, some routines, very rigid kind of program. We have a STAC program, which is for students that have alternative curriculum needs. They're on the STAR Alt 2, and they also need access to communication. It's not uncommon that they use some type of device to help them communicate assistive technology or picture exchange to communicate. So it's our students that have significant cognitive disabilities. We have a LIFE program. We actually have three levels of LIFE. That's living in functional environments. And one is medically fragile. So these are our students that really cannot independently take care of any of their needs. They're typically tube-fed. They're wheelchair bound, they're not ambulatory, they have a lot of health needs. And then we have an intermediate kind of program where students with significant cognitive disabilities, but they're not medically fragile. And then our blended co-teach is actually a LIFE program as well, but we're kind of morphing it so it's not as restricted initially for our K-1 students. So and we have four. Four is our self-contained program for students with social, emotional, and behavioral deficits. We have core program, and then even more restrictive is Core Academy. And so that continuum allows us to provide minimal supports in the mainstream setting. In class support coaches, those are minimal supports, less restrictive. Moderate supports would be resource, STARS, or, and the reason I say STARS and core is many of the times those students are able to go out and access the general ed curriculum and then come back into the program as needed. And then the more significant program is aligned with students with more significant disabilities that would require even more supports like Core Academy, LIFE, and STAC. And then these are some examples of some related services that we provide. Speech therapy. We have BCBAs, board certified behavior analysts. They have a unique role because they are actually funded about 70% through special ed and 30% from general ed. So they can serve both settings, general ed or special ed. They provide our CBI, our crisis prevention intervention training, for the district as well. We offer psychological or counseling services for students who have experienced trauma, or who have anxiety, who are withdrawn, or who need some support emotionally. Physical therapy, occupational therapy. Physical therapy is a big motor skill, like walking, running, jumping, skipping, or a fine motor or the OT, like riding with a pencil, putting the mat on, and hearing things that require fine motor. Music therapy, adaptive PE. We have visual instruction. We have teachers for the visually impaired. We have three of those, and we have orientation mobility specialists that basically that she teaches pain skills, which is how to orientate yourself in space, how to cross the street safely, how to listen to auditory cues to compensate for the vision loss. Braille, we have a contract audiologist. And we have a teacher for the deaf. We also contract with Berkfield Regional Day School Program for students that require a more restrictive placement, whose first language is not verbal or oral. And if it's sign language, they would go to Berkfield. So it's not our disabilities, it's our abilities that count. Any questions before I pass the mic?
question. So eventually, will co-teach maybe be offered as a model at the elementary level?
So it depends on the student's needs. And we do have some campuses that are incorporating co-teach already. It just depends on the needs of the students. And I would say most of them are inclusion support. Because to do a true co-teach model with Fidelity, it takes a lot of training and resources.
So like at Parkwood Hill, you know, we have 5 elementary schools that feed into us. So typically the kids either come to us that they've been either in full resource all of elementary, and then all of a sudden they're looking at that. I don't want to say drastic, but like it is a change for them going into a co-teach classroom, being like a larger group. We're working at a more advanced pace and kind of a little bit more rigorous. And so like there's a little bit of a disconnect, I guess, just from them being a resource and then jumping into that co-teach setting. So maybe eventually that might be something that's offered more at the elementary level to kind of make that transition smoother, or maybe just 3rd and 4th grade. Mm-hmm. And then my other question was, do you know of any changes happening to like STARS or anything this upcoming year?
Not for this year. I know there were a lot of changes with STARS this year.
Yes.
But we're not anticipating any STARS or any changes in STARS for next year. What we did for STARS this year is when we go back and look at the continuum, it's favorable for students to be educated to the maximum extent appropriate in the general ed setting. And so what we found, and this was, I just started in April. So this was already in motion when I got here. So I wasn't involved in the planning process of this, but I can understand the philosophy. Is that we had a lot of students that were in the STARS program that their instructional setting was 40 or 41. What the instructional setting tells us is they're mainstreamed. They're in the general ed setting, but they're not on their home campus. So if they're at a campus that has a STARS program, but they're not utilizing that STARS program, they're not needing it, they're 40, 41, they're mainstreamed in the general ed setting, they need to be at the campus with their peers that they live in the same neighborhood with. And so we looked at across the district, which students are in STARS that are coded 40 and 41 that need to return to their home campus, which is less restrictive. It puts them on the continuum that's more favorable, because it gives them access and exposure to the general curriculum and same age typical developing peers that's in the least restrictive environment in the same neighborhood where they live. And so that's the change that was made with STARS. And we did have what we call some STARS casualties, not gonna lie. And we did have some students that we made that recommendation, the art committee agreed, they started the school year at their home campus, mainstreamed, and they were going to get some of the social emotional support that they would get from the STARS program in the resource program or from a special ed teacher, and that it was not enough, it didn't work. And so we had to go make some changes and move some students back. But for the most part, I can only count maybe 2 or 3, because by the time they reach an instructional setting of 40 or 41, they're not needing the support of that STARS program the way it's designed and intended.
So we have probably about 3 kiddos who, you know, it's like, okay, either you can go over to Bear Creek or you can go to TMI, you know, or it was like, if you want to stay at your home campus, you can go in to resource, but I mean, these are students like a low put risk, very heavy supports. So it's kind of like the families, they wanted their child to stay with their peers, with their neighborhood peers, that it was like, okay, this is your choice here at the school. So I can understand not having the program maybe at every school, but maybe to have one for feeder pattern, if that's possible, just so those supports are in place.
Thanks for the input.
Anything else?
Yeah, in terms of district runner service option, where we rank, both like if we're building more for us, we kind of expect to have more services available to students, or are we contracting in, you know, other districts, maybe they're shortfall and they contract in services to tell our ISPs, or for calls, or how we can
So every district's different. Every district has their own continuum of services. The most comparable district to Keller is actually Mansfield in terms of demographics, location, region, and size. And Keller actually has, actually just met with Mansfield today because we're always wanting to learn and grow from each other. And we actually have a broader continuum than they do, and we have more personnel. And in terms of the number of students, we're very comparable. We're not as comparable. I know Northwest is close, but in size, it's not comparable. Also, I recently analyzed what I'm calling our, just to make the language simple, report card, which is, it's called results-driven accountability. It's a report that TEA provides to districts every year around October, and it basically monitors and gives you a rating on your performance and effectiveness. And we, I compared Grapevine, Colleyville, Coppell, Mansfield, Northwest, Denton, and the rating is like you're playing golf. So if you want a low score, and the scores are 0 to 4, with 0 being the best score. And our score overall, there's 18 indicators, but overall we had a indicator of 1. I believe most of the districts were a 2, with the exception of, I want to say like Grapevine, Colleyville, I think was a 1. I think Mansfield was a 2 or even a 3. So I was relatively speaking to other districts that I compared us to. I was proud that we had come up with a determination level, is what it's called, the grade or the score of a 1 as compared to some other districts. I didn't see any districts that had a 0, which would have been better than Keller.
So in this rating, a 0 is like where you want to aim for. A 3 is not where you want to be.
Yeah.
So it's like a 3 would mean like we would probably be doing corrective action plans and things like that. So just to give you some perspective.
Yeah, actually a 2 or higher, 2, 3, or 4, you have to do a corrective action plan with 2 TEA. And so we were a 1, which means we still contributed to the district improvement plan that you presented last time. Because of course we're always aiming to improve, but we didn't have to write a plan and submit it to TEA for their review, and they're not doing an on-site visit, or you know, there's no red flags really. There's always areas we can improve and get better, don't get me wrong. But overall, I was very proud of where we stand relative to other districts.
Anyone else?
I'm going to turn it over to the two Joes, Joe Baker and Joe Copeland. If you'll just press the button, there you go. They are from Student Services. And if you haven't heard them talk about their work, this will be a very enlightening conversation, I think, for you. So I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
Hi, everybody. Yes, Joe Baker and this is Dr. Copeland. So we work in student services. I work with Operating Charter Freedom Pattern, and Joe Copeland works with the Panther and the Tribe Freedom Pattern. And so we mainly work with the administrators there, but we also have a lot of other areas that we work in. So you can kind of see our team up there Dustin Lake is our leader, he's our boss. He's the one that is mine, Jack, actually, that we're, you know, that we're always going north. And so, and then of course, Kevin Kennedy, which I'm sure you guys have heard of him, he also goes under our department as the head of safety and security. So we work a lot together because a lot of our stuff kind of interacts with each other. You know, we're at the school, we all rally together and work together. And Tricia Astagon has been over work these last few years, and she has really guided our district great through this pandemic. And it's really, she's an inspiration to me, the hours that she put in, especially again, you know, when we started the school year last year, I had to do all that tracing.
On track.
Tracy. Yeah, Tracy and all that. I mean, she's up there most nights. It's amazing how hard she and her teams work. But they're also on the art department. So.
Ms. Baker and I were very close to together. It's a solid line of issue. Commissioner Federer, I'm not going to be able to do that. Performance, but there are many instances. So that makes it sense. You'll see from that presentation on the slide that there are a lot of categories. As you can see, some of them are smarter than others. And they come take a lot of time to. If you look right now, of course, there's stuff that's going on with the threat that you hear about. That's the regular commitment to think of security. But we, Joe and I, were also visible to campus and provide campus support for leadership, teachers, counselors, members. So we were all the categories that you see here, except health. A lot of times, it's the team off the nursing department. But everything you see here on the board, from crisis prevention to transportation services, discipline reports, discipline support, making decisions on what is what is not appropriate, notifications of if there are some things violating the law, and student has a ability to track federal charges. Our department mandates to organize all the systems that we put together to get processes. We're also very good a lot of times at being as patient as possible to make sure we're doing the right thing for all of us. No matter what happens, we're always trying to do our best and the kids do the same thing. So all the categories you see up here, literally, as I mentioned earlier, they have nothing to do with academics, but it has everything to do with how we're going to come to the space successfully to get back to the show. So with that, this is just a thing we use that we don't want to use, or we can follow some Twitter. So I'll open it up a little bit up for any questions you have.
So any questions for student services? Speaking of school safety, I had someone who works here tell me Monday that Keller ISD was ranked very high in the state of Texas for a safety rating. I want to say number one, but I may be wrong.
So let's go back. That person was exactly right.
Yes. So I want to make sure that was right. But it was a pretty awesome number. And I just, can you remind
me a little history on that? Prior to this, they were here in the team, the Security Council, and the Student Services Department. We went way back to the three origins of crisis. We went all the way back to find out the importance of that really encompassed. It's not just finding a way to discipline students when they make it correct. It's not just how many days of ISS, EAP, FBO, this approach, but also consider what's going on, how we help the families, how the community help the families, how we help major need, you know, students get back to whatever that normal is. So it's a comprehensive program that was developed way back. We took that as a district and involved in it for Kelvin, really like to have serving our communities, but it's been pretty phenomenal. So from that tool we're using to this day, the MPG wants to be to modify, regulate, oversee, and support any threats that come to the district. About any, so if someone says, I'm gonna do this, so I don't like you, I'm gonna come to your house, or something along those lines, we take all of that steps. But the goal is to provide a comprehensive support umbrella around those children and families or school or campus grade. So no one is doing it like me. Well, we're just about four, and we're not very proud. We have a lot of work to do. There's a lot going on. Sustainability letter has required us and all districts really to do it. But once again, we started 3 or 4 years prior to sustainability letter coming to fruition. So we were ahead of the game, and now we're just operating like a well-oiled machine.
Yes, and a lot of credit goes to Mr. Copeland and Mr. Kennedy, those who are Marcy, but you know, they went and really researched this. They went to some conferences, they really put themselves into it. And you know, they all three had three different backgrounds. You know, Joe had an educational, Marcy with the sort of counseling background, I even know, you know, he's a entire New York City police officer. So he's seen that a lot. And so so he brings that experience, and when you bring those three worlds together, it's really good because you're looking at the whole situation instead of just from my old district, from the education side. As Kevin says, we don't get a chance, another chance to get it right. So the way to get it right from the beginning. So as we know, over this last 2 weeks of Michigan, we're going to have to stop it here. So.
And I know we don't want to show the cards, or say too much because we can't. So it might just be something that's important. And then, secondly, it was right around that time that I had seventh grade. I always wondered, maybe the security of the buildings during the school day was top notch. And you don't have to say what the protocols were. I'm sure. I just kind of went into a blind faith that, for the athletes and the person, in the 80s and the 30s, but I'm sure. But it was always, the sun's not even up. You sit there and go, okay, basketball events from last night, we were trying to make it down, God knows what in his home, worked out on the time. So that's just kind of always another worry that I'm sure you guys have plans in place to be able to protect all students, not just it's
I appreciate you saying thank you. Just a view, an inside view, everyone sitting at the table, connected to the team, you do a very good job of the more often than not. We'll just be together, good, bad, and male. But we do a very good job of sharing information, whether we respond or we have to still get it moving. But we have a whole platform, there's some other ground. And that really helps us when something does happen. We call it in front of, or we act in a very timely manner. So it's just kind of easier their concern. There are cameras and eyes, cameras that you probably never even heard of. This is holding $1 billion process or something building. But we have a camera system, security camera system that is probably the best in our company. They're everywhere. You may not even know they're there. So if anything happens in real time for us in addition to hospitals, to moving that well, even on the athletic fields around the locker room, you can't move anywhere without a camera station. Well, not a locker room, but I'm in a you can't walk in anywhere
without a camera. Right. Well, as far as communication, it really is pretty cool on how it works. Is Joe or I will get a test. Let's say in a school, a student has a C, at a school in Athol have a one for that student. So somebody in the school is designated to text on us. So then the first thing we do is we create a big text, and so now we do not request all. He's looking at this morning, all the way down through communications, safety and security, Trisha asked for John and her, and then so we send that out, and that automatically kicks in. Communication starts writing a letter, they start communicating with the principal there. The principal is then we loop them in on that text message. That way, everybody knows, and then communication also communicates with board members, so they're not surprised. Like, hey, I was driving my basketball today. I saw there's an ambulance out there. And I'm like, oh, there was. So that nobody's surprised. In the age of social media, all it takes is, why is there a That's why it's their name, it's outside the city. You know, like, oh my goodness, there's new products out there, you know, and it's just a spread. So that's part of being in front of it. And it really is a whole team that's, you know, it takes that one person to send Joe or I a text and we just push out and have that active role. And really, it's so much.
Any questions?
Thank y'all.
All right, so I want to share just a few things with y'all. I want to thank this committee for helping with our instructional calendar. So y'all gave feedback that actually resulted in some changes to the instructional calendar. Usually it's Dustin Blank that's here presenting this, but he is out of town. So I told him I would put on the calendar guide pants for just a day. Here's some logistical components of the calendar. I want to show you the actual calendar. So one of the pieces of feedback that I wanted to point out is April the 7th. So initially we had that as a school day, and that is a religious holiday. It's Good Friday. And so one of the pieces of feedback from this committee is, you know, could we look at having a different option for that day, because many families take that day off. And so here was our tricky part. High schools have end of course exams that week, which is English 1 and 2. So we know that we have to have staff available if a student needs to take a makeup test. So what we decided to do is make that a teacher prep day, so that if teachers would like to use a wellness day that day or take that off as a sick or personal day, they are welcome to do that. We wanted to have high school staff available, and we won't need many, but in the event students need to take a makeup test for their English and of course exam, we wanted to have that option available to students. Another piece of feedback y'all gave was around the October break, and it seems that parents and teachers really loved that October break. And how could we extend it? In October, we see and we start to see a dip in morale, and we start to see an increase in discipline. And so one of the pieces of feedback that y'all gave was about how could we extend that just a little bit. So those were two things that y'all really helped with. One of the things I wanted to let y'all know is we're really going to be using DEIC for the calendar creation starting next year. So Dustin's going to retire the calendar process, and he's giving it to me. So yay! So that's where y'all come in. So essentially, DEIC will become a calendar committee starting in the fall. So you guys will be helping with the calendar creation for next year. We'll start that in September. But I really wanted to thank y'all, because I think there were some great things that we were able to do in this calendar. So I wanted to see if y'all had any questions. You've seen this, it's gone to the board. And I think the most important thing for parents, that parents want to know, is when is school going to start? And our first day of instruction will be August the 17th. And I think the most common question, how many of you will have seniors?
I will.
Okay. So the most common question that we get is graduation early on Monday? And the answer is yes, it is. And so we moved, graduation is now at Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. And the reason for that move is in our old location, we had to limit tickets for families. And I know as my nephew graduated just recently, it was awful having to say, okay, you can come, but you can't. And so that's the concern that we got, is the limited amount of tickets that families have. Well, Dickies Arena allows unlimited families and seats, but we begin competing with Fort Worth schools in neighboring districts. And so our day is Monday.
And I, and so, yes, it is.
The other thing kind of think about was because of my,
yes.
Once we get past the next year's graduating class, yes. They won't come in.
Yes, 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 yeah. Yeah.
So,
then everyone stays over for the weekend. It is, yeah. So I think that's been the most common question. Is graduation really on Memorial Day? And the answer is yes, it is. Jill.
So, is that alcohol
day
the day after Easter?
I believe so. Hold on, let me find it. It's an, yes, it is. So it's, we're going to categorize that as an equivalency day for teachers. And if you are a teacher, so parents' equivalency time won't mean that much to you, but for teachers it does. And so one of the things that HR did is they opened up the ways that teachers can get equivalency time. So I think this might be of interest to you. So Tracy Johnson, who is our head of HR, she said, think about in the business world, like if you're an attorney, you can bill hours, like for answering emails or things like that. And so teachers should be able to do the same thing for equivalency time. So basically, teachers can receive equivalency time for if you're lesson planning on the weekends, if you're answering emails, if you're doing work anytime outside of the school day. So,
House
Bill
4540.
So, so I'm surprised I'm hearing that. So that tells me we need to communicate again because it went into effect this year. And so teachers have to get 18 hours of equivalency time, but now it is very wide open. So I like it because it's honoring the time that you're, I mean, you're spending more than 18 hours outside of the workday, but it's going to be very easy to get equivalency time. Yes. So, so really, we don't anticipate anyone not achieving equivalency time. With the opening that up, it should be very easy to achieve that. So, yes.
My only other question.
So they are going to allow for that on this day. So just because we knew that this, a lot of people take this holiday off, and so that will be enough. So
it's February. Is that a 4-day weekend too? The 17th.
So February, okay, let me look at the color coding. So for students,
yes.
Students will have February 17th off. Everyone will have February 20th off.
So yes.
So for students, they'll have the Friday and the Monday, but staff will just have the Monday.
So October was 13th, 14th.
So for October, the first 9 weeks will end on October 12th. Teachers will come on October 13th, but students will be off from the 13th and they'll come back on the 18th. So they'll have quite a few, yeah. I don't know if they all were in Keller. About 10 years ago, we used to have, you would remember, yes, we had an October break, which was awesome.
Yeah, sure.
It was so awesome. And so, you know, as part of the EIC, part of what I'll be asking y'all to do is collect feedback as we go through next year, as we plan for what the calendar for the next year will look like. So. And I had to call Dustin about this today because I was like, staff development waiver, are we required to have a certain amount of staff development minutes? And what he told me is our half days, what
This is really not about staff development. What this allows us to do is on our half days, we can count those as instructional minutes. So we gave the example of December the 17th as an early release date, even though students are only here for 4 hours and 15 minutes, we can count those remaining minutes towards our 75,600. So if you've been around a while, the state would say kids have to be in school this many days. Well, they changed it to minutes. So that, and that's really benefited us and Keller, because if we have bad weather makeup days, we have enough banked minutes in our calendar where we haven't had to go. I mean, how many of you remember when we had a makeup school on a Saturday? I mean, it has happened. And so this is not really, I don't know why they call it a staff development week, because it's not really about staff development. But it's just allowing us to count those half day minutes in our instructional time. Yes. And I know that that concern has been brought up, and I have taken that concern forward. There was no change to that. And so I'm going to ask y'all as we move into the spring, we'll want to collect feedback on that to see. It was very interesting. Now I'm trying to remember the levels. I think it was one level was in favor of the 15 minutes, and the other level was not in favor. And I can't remember if it was elementary was in favor, but secondary wasn't. I don't have that in front of me, but it was like a 50-50 split, which was about an hour on it.
And that started in the 2020?
I believe it started with COVID. When we
came back from COVID.
Because I think the rationale was, they were going to have to stagger dismissals, and so they needed to add extra time. They were trying to decrease the crowding in the hallways from one class to another, so extending that to the calendar. So we did have some questions from this group. Can we decrease those 15 minutes? So that was brought forward, and it was decided to keep with that 15 minutes. So if that still continues to be a concern, we can take that back again. All right, so we've covered a lot tonight. What, is there anything on Zoom? Questions on Zoom?
Let's see.
We'll meet in February. We'll have finance here. So if you've never heard their presentation, Scott will be here. We'll talk to you about the taper. It's a very exciting report full of data. I'll go over our district performance objectives, and then are there any waivers that we need to bring to you as well?
The one question addresses the documentation of EQ time.
Okay.
If it's not already mandated through Strive, and yes. The concern is that may not have been communicated clearly at every campus.
So actually, we're not requiring documentation of 18 hours. That's just sort of a local campus decision. So we're not mandating that teachers go into Strive and say, let's send an hour on email and let's send an hour here. We're just using professional judgments. With EQ. So we'll make sure you get that out. Yes. That's not a surprise since that came out last year. So it came out last year in the spring. So clearly we need to do a better job of that. So, yes. Yeah. And those reading. Those reading academies, I'm participating as well. And so for parents, I think it's House Bill 3 came out several years ago, and it requires that any teacher or principal in grades K through 3 have to participate and successfully pass the reading academy by next spring, or they cannot teach grades K through 3. If the principal doesn't pass it, they can't be a principal at elementary.
So this is like continuing ed for teachers that are trying to teach and they have to do this?
And it's a lot. It's about 60 hours worth of, it's like a college course almost. So I participated in it because I wanted to see what teachers were having to do. And I will tell you, it's a lot. It's good. It's a lot. So I will share from the group, we have to turn in artifacts. So we have to have like a problem of practice. We have to, there'll be videos and you have to provide written responses that someone grades. You have quizzes so that they make sure you're paying attention and not just skipping through. So it's a lot of work on our teachers. And so if they're currently teaching grades K through 3 and they have not passed the Reading Academy by next May, the state will not allow them to teach in a kindergarten through 3rd grade classroom. So it's a lot. So
do they have to do this every single year?
So it's a one-time thing. So what we've been doing is trying to phase it in. This is our 2nd year, so we'll have our last cohort go through. But what's going to be tough about this is when we have new teachers come in, like they might be a first-year teacher and they're going to have to do this in their first year. So it's we're trying to find the best way to support the teachers. It's a lot.
What if they did it at another school district and they're coming in?
Then it will count. It will count. Yes. Yeah.
At least.
So. It's, I think it's been good to take it because I can see exactly, and the material is really good. It goes into a lot of the science of reading. It's great instruction, but it is, you're taking a college course. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's just something we also want to be cognizant of when, you know, our campuses are having initiatives, and like if this is their time for their teachers to go through, it's just a lot of work. So we just want to be, and they are developing, I've heard, a pre-K, pre-academy, and then a 4, 5, and 6. So, you know, who knows what will come of that.
Why are they doing this?
You know, I know there was legislation that kind of kicked in for K through 3. I do think there is, you know, when people go through it, you will hear people talk about that the content is good. It just takes a long time to do it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
what prompted it? Kids were failing in those grades?
We've struggled with reading. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. Teaching reading is not, you get your college degree, but you don't necessarily know how to be a reading teacher just because you've gotten your elementary degree. That's an additional component. And it takes a lot to teach reading from letter recognition to comprehension. Mm-hmm. And so this is additional training to ensure that our classroom teachers, and we're bumping it up in grade levels because they're seeing probably the effectiveness of it. If I had to guess, I'm just guessing, but 4, 5, 6, we still have kids who are struggling, especially now with the pandemic. Reading gaps are going to continue to be a problem for several years. So ensuring that all of those teachers know the science behind teaching students reading.
And we've been told that teachers who are in college wanting to be a teacher, they will have an additional exam that they will have to pass. That will hopefully take the place of going through a reading academy. Okay. So we'll see how that all turns out. I'm sure there'll be some legislation in our next legislature. Yes. So, what else can I answer for y'all this evening?
This is kind of off topic. Should have asked about the first one, but or one of the meetings you had talked about, since this is you, the federal and state funding. Mm-hmm. They give you money, they want something in return, right?
Yes.
So is the state or federal government trying to push? I mean, we've all heard the buzzwords this year, right? The TESOL or the CRT, or are they making you do, receiving like the COVID funding?
So our funding with every grant, thank you. With every grant, there are what are referred to as allowable activities. So a grant identifies the things, items, activities that those funds can be spent on. And it depends on the purpose of the grant. So we have there's a current grant out for health and safety. And it was specifically to support those districts that wanted to pursue vaccine clinics and things like that. So there's a list of activities that go with grants that identify, but nothing gets so specific to say something like a particular area. So it's learning, it's safety, it's broad topics, not drilled down that specific because it's for the entire state or the entire nation.
So that they don't make you adopt some specific curriculum.
No, ma'am.
That imposes the CRT.
No, they absolutely do not. No, they're identified to support services already in place. And you don't, we don't have, there's a lot of them that we don't have to apply for. We can decide whether or not, like the health and safety grant, we decided not to pursue because we were receiving funding for the vaccines that we currently have available from another source. So this particular grant, we chose not to pursue. Some of them we don't have to pursue if it doesn't agree and it doesn't have things in it. Some of them are intended for very small districts that, you know, you've heard of districts in the state of Texas that are referred to as consolidated districts because they cover so many miles. And those districts have a hard time delivering services like we do because we're not all next door to each other. They may travel hundreds of miles just to get to the next campus. So those districts didn't have, when COVID hit, they didn't have the online pieces and the virtual pieces and Zoom and some of those other technological pieces. They just don't bring in enough money because not enough people live there. And so these grants were intended to help those districts put some of those services in place during a pandemic. So some of the grants are driven by need, but they're not necessarily applicable to every district in the state. Does that help? Other questions we can answer this evening?
And there are, Lee and I sit down and review the grants quite a bit. And there are times where we're like, no, we don't need to pursue that grant. Sometimes there can be a lot of strings attached with federal funding. And so you have to kind of weigh out, is it going to be more work to have that than we need to go
through? Oversight or
correct. The oversight, the paperwork, the auditing piece, the documentation, is it worth, is the $1 million, for example, is it worth all the work that's attached to it? Like another grant came out and you had to have your application in by this week, by today, I believe. And you had to have all the money spent. They were gonna grant the money in January and you had to have it all spent by spring break. It was too fast a turnaround, we decided. There was no way that we could dedicate enough time and people to address that, decided that barrier was more than we wanted to take on. So we passed on that opportunity. It just kind of depends. Mm-hmm. That was contract.
Yeah. I was curious if that was a grant because it was girl selected part of fleets in the cat.
Correct. Yeah, that was not grant.
All right, I'll stay around if you have any questions. Thanks for Zoom people joining us, and we will see you in February. But if you need anything, I think y'all know you can reach out to me at any time. So.
Absolutely. Just give us a call anytime.
Thank you.